Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
All throughout the year, we've been travelling through Ireland with our roadshow Open for Business, where we've been visiting large towns in Ireland to look at how they're doing. We talk to retailers and business people, as well as some well-known residents. We've been to Enniscrone, Ballinasloe, Dundalk, Enniscorthy and Carrick and Shannon, all in the year 2024. One of the big parts of the show is that we give the town a health check with our panel of experts in the form of planning expert Conor Skeen and also retail consultant Eddie Shannon, who visit the town in advance and they report back on their findings. Sometimes the audience may not like what they hear, but they have a say, and we do try and be fair, we try and be objective, and it's something that has created a big interest for our listeners as we've gone around the country. So for the next hour, we're going to be chatting to Eddie and Conor about their overall findings and bringing some of the highlights of the various shows to you. Conor, I might start with you. On the whole, the regional towns we mentioned there, Ballinasloe, Dundalk, Enniscorthy, Carrick and Shannon, Enniscrone, just they're all different, but are there commonalities about Irish rural towns that are changing and that are kind of trying to reorganise themselves for the way we live today?
Yeah, they're definitely changing, and it's a really interesting time to be visiting them because post-COVID, COVID changed everything, and working from home combined with online shopping and working online has meant that many of those places now have a real future as destinations for people who want to have a high-quality life, often with a good salary, but they can choose where they live.
Yeah, and you know, you would have thought there's still a huge imbalance in the property values if you look at Dublin versus Leitrim. Nothing against Leitrim, but that doesn't seem to have reflected itself in the cost of acquiring property.
Property is a reasonable indicator, but not infallible, about prosperity. And it has to do with other factors as well. So most of it has to do with being within 40 minutes of a source of work. That's actually what the real issue is. You forget, I mean, places like Galway City have completely comparable prices to Dublin City. So we have to be careful about those types of generalisations. So you ask yourself what you can get within 40 minutes of Air Square in Galway, and you realise the range of choices that are available. And it's the travel distance from the downtown that's the really most compelling part of it.
And would you not have thought that there would have been a greater impact in the greater Dublin area with that trend happening over the last couple of years?
In terms of taking the...
Well, has there been more people coming into Dublin to fill the spaces of those who are leaving and relocating down the country?
No, we're living in a period of quite remarkable population growth. So it's a matter of trying to figure out where the growth is going. I mean, Ireland is growing like the clappers.
Yeah.
It has a lot of problems coming with it. But, I mean, you have to remind yourself that being in a country that's got too many people is a privilege these days in Western Europe. People in Spain and Italy would give their right arm to have our problems.
Yeah. Eddie, in terms of the retail experience, and again, we reflect maybe on the towns that we visited this year. The retail experience, a lot of these towns are having to change how they interact with retail customers. There isn't the same prevalence, I suppose, of department stores or large shops that there maybe once was in these mid-sized towns. So what are your own observations, I suppose, at a high level?
Well, I'm going to follow on something Conor said. COVID changed everything, and it changed retail dramatically. And many people who worked in retail left and moved on to other jobs and chose to work from home. And that meant that we lost a lot of training and investment in staff in the retail sector. And I think that is a critical issue. And it was an issue in all of the towns that I visited. Now, there were some excellent examples of great service, but there were also some examples of where people didn't seem to commit to the customer in the way that I think a customer deserves to be served. So there's a big challenge for retailers now to re-energise the sector, to recreate career paths within retailing. The other thing that I think has happened since COVID is that a lot of retail buyers have stopped travelling like they used to. So the choice is becoming more homogenous, and it's the same on every street, and everybody in all of the different shops are now carrying all the same labels. And, you know, I'm always conscious of that great piece of advice of the late Karl Lagerfeld. The object of our industry is to create desire. You have to create desire. Well, if everything is the same in every shop, there's a deficit in desire.
Yeah. And when you say that, you know, that everything is becoming the same, or there's a blandness around how people are buying, and I mean buyers from retail stores. Like, does a rising tide not lift all boats in the case of, if you've got a drag of five or six good retailers together, that it becomes a very powerful entity to attract people to the area?
So you could say the rising tide opens up channels for people to go elsewhere as well.
I suppose it does. You know,
and the other thing that we have to bear in mind is that we're now in a period where people want to go back to physical retail as well. They want to have that choice, and that retail is now multi-channel. Now, some people are inclined to regard that as either or, but it's actually both working together. So you have people couch surfing at 8 o'clock in the evening and checking out where they're going to go and buy at the weekend. So if you don't have a good online channel, then you're losing out on the game of retailing. And I think it's very important to remember that the customer is now the point of sale, but the point of purchase is the point of best experience. And the customer experience now needs to be an integration of online and physical retail.
Okay, well said. Now, during our Open for Business shows, we talked to local businesses, big and small, to get a sense of what the town had to offer and how it would be faring. Here's a flavour of some of the people I spoke to when we were in Carrick and Shannon in County Leitrim. Let's talk to Paul O'Brien of OBN Financial Services. Paul, you're very welcome to the programme. Tell us about this Carrick Camino. It sounds fantastic.
Thanks, Bobby. It's good to be here. Carrick Camino is in its fourth year this year, and Carrick Chamber, it's run by Carrick and Shannon Chamber of Commerce. And in 2019, we had a huge year in Carrick Chamber. We reinvigorated the chamber. We got a huge uplift in our membership. And then the COVID came along. And like in a lot of places, it killed an awful lot of voluntary work. It killed our momentum. And it put basically a kibosh on all the good work we'd done in 2019. So in 2021, we said, look, we need something fresh and new to get us back working together in a project. And Carrick Camino was born out of that. And we're advised by everyone not to do it because we're still under sort of restrictions and that sort of stuff. So we went ahead with it. And just at the time we were going ahead, all the restrictions were dropped. So we got to have Carrick Camino. So it was one of the few things that happened in 2021.
And as I understand it, it's a 34-kilometre hike.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about what it entails.
You come to Carrick and Shannon, you register in the market yard, you're bussed out as far as Ballyfernan in Roscommon, the far gates of Kilronan, and you come back then on a 34-kilometre hike through the Arigna Mountains, through the village of Arigna, all the way down along Loch Allen, into Drumshambo, Acres Lake. Then you come along the Blue Way into Leitrim Village. It's a fantastic route. We're blessed to have a fantastic route, which is maintained brilliantly by Roscommon Leader Partnership and Leitrim as well. But they give us fantastic support and help with the trail.
Okay, and the numbers of people using this Camino, the Carrick Camino, it's whatever, nearly 3,000 people doing it.
Yeah, well, we it's on one day a year. It's a guided route. It's a guided route on the 31st. It's the last Saturday in August every year. It's only one day a year because a part of our route is actually private land. Frank Whitney gives us his farmland. So it is only one day a year. We have great numbers. Tickets are on carrickcamino.ie. Had to get that in. We have great turnout and people really enjoy
it. Okay. Also joining us is Conor Marr from the Oarsman, a great gastro pub about 100 yards from here. I'm going to start with you, Conor, because I was in your lovely hostelry last night. And firstly, you operate the business with your brother. You've been in business quite a long number of years. How did it all come about?
Well, Bobby, we're the seventh generation of our family practicing hospitality in the town. Myself and Owen took over the business in 2002. And back then, Kieran alluded to earlier, like there were very few restaurants out there, and we just saw a gap in the market.
Yeah.
Having worked abroad, we just knew that you know, Kerry could really do with a food-led kind of business, you know, bringing in kind of local organic food, sustainable food, yeah, and presenting it with love on the plate.
Well, one of the things that I noticed last night, the first thing was on the left-hand side of the menu. All the staff are mentioned, then all the a list of all the suppliers and where the food comes from. And I just thought it was it's credible, it's sincere, and what you see is what you get.
Well, we're very proud of all our staff and our suppliers. I mean, they're an integral part of the business. Without our staff, we're nothing. And I think hopefully you got to sample the hospitality last night.
It was absolutely fantastic.
And again, our suppliers, we work with so many local suppliers, and that is our key philosophy and has been since the beginning. The likes of Georgia and Leitrim Hill, or Goat's Cheese, where Eddie kind of visited the shop, and Rye River, we have their products as well from Tom, who's a native of Carrick via Cork, I have to say. He's a very proud Corkman
as well.
We'll
be challenging him on that a bit later on. Yeah. And just finally, before we talk to some other guests, working with your brother, food and beverage, hospitality, it's a tough station. It's a tough business. The fact that there's two of you surely helps.
Absolutely. I think we bring in different dynamics to the business. And as you said, I mean, it's a challenging environment out there. So having two of us to shoulder the pressure really makes it a lot easier. But we have... we're just hoping, if we can give a little kind of plug in, that the government might see fit to bring VAT down for us.
All right.
So that would be very important to the business.
Also with family, you can kill each other and then make up afterwards, which always works well.
Is that what Roland said to you last night?
Thanks, Connor. Let's talk about Moon River Cruises now, because Pamela joins us.
Hi, Bobby.
How are you, Pamela? How are things?
You're very welcome to Carrick and Shannon.
Yeah, lovely to be here. I was reading your brochure, and I think you're going to like this, because I just picked up the brochure outside in the hotel, and it said live music, commentary, and then bar on board. And I read it as live music with a complimentary bar on board.
I know, we couldn't do that.
I thought that mightn't be a great business proposition, particularly in a place like Carrick and Shannon.
No, it wouldn't be a good idea.
Tell us about it. It's a great business, and you've been in it for many years. Tell us all about it.
Yeah, so the Moon River is over 26 years here in Carrick and Shannon. It was the brainchild of Jerry Murtha and the Murtha family. He's seen an opportunity where people couldn't afford cruisers at the time in Carrick and Shannon, and decided that there was a place there for a boat that could bring people up and down the Shannon. He designed it himself and brought over a designer called Hugo van der Swan from Holland, who took his drawings, and Moon River, it is what it is today, the iconic that it is here in Carrick and Shannon.
How many people does it accommodate?
The boat itself can hold up to between 80 and 100 people.
Right.
Yeah.
So you've a mixed bag then of, I suppose, scheduled tours, there's some corporate.
Yeah, we run from the end of January right up to second last week in December. So we have everything from public cruises, which we're running at the minute every day. They take your daycationers, your active age, your families. Then we have, at the moment, when he first started off, he had one tour company coming. We now, 6 days of the week, we have buses stopping here in Carrick and Shannon, which is a knock-on effect for other businesses in the town. I mean, they might go on to us, they might go for lunch, they have a look around the dock, they shop in the town, so it is great for the town to have it here as well. Then obviously there was an opportunity where Carrick became very popular for hens and stags. It became we seen that there was an opportunity to bring them out for an hour, and at the moment we run six of those cruises on a Saturday back to back.
Six back to back
from
and are they all sold out?
They're all sold out, especially in the summer. They would be all sold out.
That's and like 600 people.
It's about 600 people, so it's we run it very well. We've been doing it for a long, long time. Buses bring them to and from, and they really enjoy it. I think there's always this image in their mind when they come, we want to go on the water, and they get on board, they do rock the boat, and they're happy out.
Great, well done. Some of the business people and retailers there from our Open to Business Roadshow in Carrick and Shannon in Leitrim earlier this year. After the break, I'll have some more reflections from Connor and Eddie and some more highlights. Now, you're most welcome back to Down to Business. We're looking back on some of the highlights of our Open for Business Roadshow from various towns throughout Ireland. In studio, I'm here with Conor Skehan and Eddie Shannon, who are reflecting on the towns we visited. Conor, back to you. What are your thoughts on transport, connectivity of the towns that you've seen in the show, as in how people get into them, how they move around in the towns, and I suppose public transport and all those kind of things?
Well, you've framed it very well by differentiating between public transport and other transport, for a start. It's very important always with transport to be aware of the fact that it's a menu, it's a spectrum of different types of movement. So, for instance, we're watching the new local bus services that are springing up in many rural areas of Ireland that are allowing, say, teenagers who wouldn't be able to drive yet to go into a bigger town on a Saturday morning, and then similarly older people who mightn't be as able to move about use those. So that's increasing the footfall and the mix of types of people. The other aspect of transport, though, is the business about car access and parking. You know, it's a very contentious topic and very unpopular in a time when planners are bringing forward the values and virtues of pedestrianisation. But at the end of the day, it must be also balanced with access to shopping areas. You're not going to carry a new sofa down the main street of the pedestrianised.
And on that point, are planners somehow out of touch?
Definitely.
With reality?
Definitely.
When it comes to telling us all that we need pedestrianisation.
Exactly.
And like that, how do you carry a sofa down the street?
One of the problems is that that it is possible to rescue a typical Irish town, right? But it means that you need massive intervention in the so-called backlands, so that the large footplates that are needed for modern types of retail and the offering they require can plug onto the main street. But we have an excessive attention to detail about the minutiae of historic and conservation planning that doesn't allow us those kinds of very robust interventions that are needed at the back. So you look at places like Sligo. Sligo manages to have a fantastic main shopping street, but big, huge beasts of retail plugged in behind it. Clonmel has done the same thing. Kilkenny has done the same thing. The places that have succeeded and stayed alive have torn themselves apart in a good sense, kept the best of what was old, but plugged all the good stuff in at the edge.
And you mean keeping big stores in the centre of town?
That's it. And so we saw, for instance, Ballinasloe, which has a lot of lovely offering, has too much of stuff that's too big and it's too far to walk from the two ends. So the town was like a dumbbell. Both parts were lovely, but there was no connectivity. They weren't feeding off into each other at all.
Yeah.
And it was a sad thing to see that.
Eddie, you talked about online versus bricks and mortar there before the break. You've been critical very publicly on these shows about retailers not having a good online presence. So how can you advise or provoke people to be better online? In other words, to articulate the importance that is online, even though you're a bricks and mortar retailer.
A shop is a shop, whether it's online or off. You open the door in the morning, you sweep the floor, you rearrange the displays. But if you look at a lot of Irish retail websites, they have last year's Christmas decorations on the homepage. Some of them have the year before. An online shop needs as much, if not more, attention because people's expectations are instant when they go online. And I think that's a critical issue.
And that's your shop window, effectively.
That's your shop window. And the homepage is exactly that. It is your shop window. And shop windows over the decades have been proven to be a significant, if not the most significant, influence on a consumer purchase.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with that. And I know you're reflecting back on traditional retail, but the importance of the shop window, the effort, the cost that people going into window displays, even announcing new seasons, they're a vital marketing tool.
Many stores will have new collections in a physical store that they haven't even put up online.
Yeah.
And it's that attention to detail and that attention to merchandising and always looking in over the counter, not just out over. Look in over the counter with customers' eyes. Look in over the counter of your digital shop and ask yourself, is it the best that it should be and can be?
Okay. Stay with us because on each show we'll be talking to some well-known business people from the area. When we were in Enniscrone in Sligo, we spoke to undertakers and an all-round fascinating business person. That was David McGowan. Have a listen to this. Now, my next guest burst into our national consciousness with his plans to turn a jumbo jet into a glamping attraction back in 2016. Since then, we've seen him talking about his day job in an RTE documentary on his funeral business. It's great to welcome a man I've met before, but I'm delighted to meet again, Mr. David McGowan, to Down to Business. How are you, David?
I'm all right now. The last time I seen you, we were measuring you up to see would you sleep in a taxi.
Yeah, that's right. So, and again, it was back in those, I think that was probably in...
17.
Was it 16 or 17?
17.
Yeah. So I remember being on the site. I remember interviewing you up on the upstairs of a double-decker bus. There was a London taxi outside. And the plane that is so much talked about had just arrived, I think, maybe a few weeks beforehand.
That's right, yeah. And it brought a lot of excitement and attention to the part of this island that I live on.
Yeah.
So I'm a very proud Sligo person. And I just love living and working in this area.
Yeah. Mm. And David, you have dreams, you have plans. You're fascinated, I think, by transport, and you haven't quite got the glamping village off the ground yet. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, and there's several reasons behind that. I'm sure there's a lot of people around Ireland wondering why it has never changed. But this is a business program, so there's part two to it. It was a challenge in all the different moves.
Yeah.
It was a challenge buying it. It was a challenge coming up with the idea. It was a challenge closing down an international airport. It was a challenge pulling it up the Atlantic Ocean. It was a challenge getting it onto a beach, 500 ton of it,
yeah,
and then getting it up to my back garden. But, you know, it's like everything else. We had a great local support here. Everybody seen the excitement. It brought joy and business around the place. I mean, I think they ran out of chips 3 weekends in a row here after bringing it in. So, I mean, that could all be good for business and it lifted the people as well. Now, all of those things being said was very good and exciting, and we brought attention to the part of the island I live on. But then there's a challenge of business. You know, we didn't want it to become a white elephant. And in rural Ireland, it's a challenge.
Can I ask, are you still looking for an investor to help you?
Yeah, we went round
off the ground.
Look, at any business today, you know, you have to have your head screwed on. It costs a lot of money to do these things.
Yeah.
And to be honest, my funeral business was supporting all the moves and everything else. But there's a time you have to stop and say, right, when is this project going to take off on its own? And there are a lot of challenges in the planning. And, you know, I realised halfway through the whole development that the proper infrastructure wasn't in the rural town to support it.
Okay.
So the local authorities was looking for me to put in a whole sewer system, despite the sewer running right through my site.
That was David there, David McGowan there, talking to me about his business life and times in Sligo. You're listening to a special part of the show where we're looking back on some of the highlights and reflections from our Open for Business Roadshow. Throughout the year with me in studio are Conor Skeehan and Eddie Shanahan, two great experts in their respective fields. And we had really a lot of fun along the way, looking at the different towns and, you know, the diversity, the difference in them. And I think we, as a team, we got maybe collectively a bit sharper as we went on, because you get the experience of one town and you can benchmark it against another. Conor, back to you, because from a planning point of view on your travels, do you see town planners attempting to try new and creative things, or do you see them operating totally differently?
It can be very idiosyncratic. People who have been in a particular county, planners who've been in a county for a very long time, have a very fine-grained understanding of the working of the county. And that's reflected in the interventions. They tend to be sensitive. They tend to be population-led. They tend to be business-led. Ones that might be a bit excessively ambitious tend to be led by ideologies. And the ideologies can sometimes sit harshly on the reality of things like retail and movement.
I don't want to cause a war out there, but when we talk about things like cyclists, there seems to be an infrastructure being put in place now right across the country, both urbanly and rurally, around creating infrastructure for cyclists. Mm. Do you think that the transition to, because it seems to me that there's a lot of cycle infrastructure out there that isn't really hitting its full potential?
Well, I'm somebody who's never driven a car in my life. I don't know how to drive, and spent most of my life highly dependent on a bicycle. But the most important thing in learning to use a bicycle is to learn when to get off.
Yeah.
And that little sign, as you go in through Trinity College in Dublin, which says cyclists dismount, says everything. I was with a friend on a street in a small European town a couple of years ago, and the policeman upbraided my companion, saying, "Do you not have enough wit to get off your bicycle at this hour of the day?"
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It was meant to be self-policing.
Yeah. So I often wonder as well at the futility of all these, you know, do the planners and do the councils, do they almost pit different cohorts of society against each other? The motorist versus the cyclist versus the person on public transport. Should they really be at each other's throats?
Good planning should always be about both and, never about either or. And there's a lot of virtue signalling going on at the moment where somebody using a motorised transportation is presumed to be less good a person than somebody who's got a bicycle or a cargo bike. If that person using the car is an elderly person or is female, they've incredibly different needs. Women use cars incredibly differently to men. A woman very seldom travels in a car on her own. She's inevitably performing some type of social service for other people. So you affect a woman in a car and you affect three or four other people. Affect a man in a car and it's easy to make caricatures, unless you stop and think that the man in the car is using the car to carry the tools of his trade as well. And it's a completely different thing. So you can't make generalisations.
Okay, we won't do that. Eddie, in terms of the retail experience, we talked about COVID and the pandemic. What's the legacy of the pandemic, I suppose, when it comes to a retail analysis?
Bad service.
Is it?
In two words.
And why is that?
Because a lot of people moved on to other jobs and we didn't invest in training the new recruits. And I think it's very, very important. And the responsibility for that rests with the owner. It's not the fault of the staff. It's the fault of the management. And I would say it should be an entitlement for somebody coming into a job that they get the proper training. And this is training about dealing with customers, the lifeblood of retail, the people who put their hard-earned cash on the table and that deliver profits for retailers.
Yeah. And do you think sometimes the customer gets lost in all the complexity of everything that's going on, where the customer should really be at the centre of everything?
The customer should always be at the centre of everything. And all retailers should be nothing less than customer centric, because that consumer has other options where to spend their money. And I would argue that a lot of that is evidenced now in the number of people eating out every night of the week. So they chose to spend their money elsewhere. And I think staff training is... It's relatively easy. It can be driven by building career paths and moving away from zero-hour contracts and giving people hope and a future.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, stay with us. I'm with Conor and Eddie. We're analysing our Open for Business roadshow that we had, six of them during the year. So one of the things we do on the show whenever we're out there and about is we visit some local businesses doing something that's a bit different and maybe a bit interesting. Again, back in Enniscrone, I went for a seaweed bath.
Now, your bath is prepared for you exactly the same way as it has been for the last 112 years.
No way.
Yeah, you've got the great big old porcelain baths, original taps and everything. So your bath is filled with hot seawater. Now, that's the thing that sets here apart from other places, maybe, in that it's hot seawater and seaweed, literally seaweed that we gather off the, we cut off the shore at low tide every day. So it's a totally fresh thing. It's not the smelly stuff you might be used to seeing on the beach when you be swimming.
So I like this quote out of your brochure. Imagine that you are immersed in an enormous bath, luxuriating in expensive bath oils. As you relax, you experience weightlessness. You are floating in a tranquil amber-tinted sea of unashamed luxury. I can't wait.
Yeah, I should have been a writer, shouldn't I? Yes, well, that's exactly what it is. And the amazing thing is that it's an entirely natural product. The bath, as I said, is filled with seawater. The seaweed is fresh seaweed that's harvested at low tide. And before we put it in, the only treatment it gets, about 20 seconds of steam.
Right.
And the steam breaks down the seaweed plant and it releases the alginate into the water, which is actually chemically a gel, which goes into solution in the seawater, so you get this lovely oily texture in the bath.
Okay. So there's no crabs or starfish or anything like that in there?
You're the only thing that's alive in the bath, Bobby.
Okay, so you missed a bit there, but I'm actually in the seaweed bath now. I jumped in. Just to describe it for our listeners, I'm in an old Edwardian room with really cool Victorian tiles. The seawater is pumped up from the beach. It comes right up from the beach and is pumped up onto the roof, where it's fed by gravity down into the bathroom. They've got steam cabinets here as well, which is another part of the process. So I'm in the seaweed bath now, and it's really nice. You can hear it there. So all that's in the bath is me, seaweed, water, and the water is kind of a beautiful amber colour, as the brochure describes it. It's not brown, it's beautifully amber. So I think what's happening now is all the iodine from the seaweed is being released and it's finding its way into my beautiful skin, something like that. Edward, tell me more.
Bobby, I couldn't have done better myself to describe it. Yeah, the reason seaweed is good for you is that there's a very high concentration of iodine in seawater, and when you add seaweed, then it really bumps it up. Now, what gives the water that amber colour is the photosynthetic material in the seaweed. But what gives it the oily texture is the alginate in the seaweed,
right,
which it's as you're bathing there, as you're moving the seaweed around, is actually coming out into the water all the time.
Me taking a seaweed bath there, and then it's grown, not a sight for the faint-hearted. You're listening to Down to Business, and we're looking back at some of the best bits from our Open for Business shows. Loads more to come after the break. Now, you're most welcome back to this special hour of Down to Business, where we're looking back on some of the best bits of our Open for Business roadshow and reflecting on the state of the modern Irish town with Conor Skean and Eddie Shanahan. In September, we were in Dundalk, and I caught up with adopted Dundalk legend and former Republic of Ireland manager, Stephen Kenny. You've said yourself that all management jobs in football end in some sort of failure. And I suppose...
Is that right?
Yeah, well, that's what I
what
read.
Broadcasting?
But it's like, when you stand back and look at that statement, it is ultimately true, in that it's very hard to go out on a high note from anything. You're back at St. Pat's now, where you started. What was it like to come back there, you know, having left it so many years ago, gone on, done your success with Dundalk, managed Ireland, highs and lows there, and then you're back in a place where you began almost?
Yeah, no, I did. I did manage the under-21 team for one season at St. Pat's, and that was my introduction to coaching in the league. But, it took me a while to readjust. It's a big fall when you come from the national team. Certainly, to manage Ireland is the biggest privilege of your life. It's you know, so many wonderful experiences, managing your country, managing at that level, and obviously 3 seasons with Ireland, two seasons, 18 months with the under-21 team, which was fantastic. We had a vision for where we wanted to bring players through the underage system. We brought them into the first team. We've had, obviously, over 20 players have come into the senior international team. There was a massive deficit between players 21 and 31 when I took over. There was no players in that middle gap, or very few, and now we've 13 players in the Premier League now, which is incredible, really, to what we had. So it's a good job now, I feel. I think, obviously, I was 3 years there, and when you leave, it is a big fall, and I had options to go abroad at different times, which I would have been happy to take. Circumstances changed, and I went to St. Pat's. Gary Kelleher, the owner there, offered me the job. I was very pleased to accept in the end. And it took me a while to readjust psychologically to getting back into club football.
Did it? Yeah,
it did. It took me a little bit, but we've obviously had a really good European campaign where we've been and played a team from the Swiss League. We've been in Azerbaijan, and we've been in Istanbul in recently to get to the group stages, which would have been obviously massive, the first time in the club's history to get there. So it was six brilliant European games, but Istanbul were just a little too good in the end.
So with all your experience over the years, Stephen, do you sort of accept that it's a business of highs and lows, or can you ever accept that?
Oh, no, I absolutely. Yeah. And I've experienced both ends of the spectrum. You know, I've experienced incredible highs and incredible lows.
Yeah.
And you spoke about the administration on Dock. I remember being at Derry and the club going through administration. That was such a tough process.
Yeah.
You know, that was such a tough...
Because you're dealing with people's lives and livelihoods.
Oh, it's massive, like, in terms of, you know, and then to restart. People think you can just restart. You can't. It's not that easy. So it's that was a really tough experience. But resilience is important.
Absolutely.
When you have your setbacks, they can crush you, but you have to build up a level of resilience that shows that you can, you know, come back from whatever's thrown at you.
Well, look, we wish you well, and it's great to talk to you. And you talk about, we'll end on a positive note then. So, St. Pat's for this year, is it?
No. Really, the league is fascinating, really, with Shelbourne, Damien Duff having a great time at Shelbourne, Rory Higgins, really innovative coach at Derry, and Stephen Bradley, Shamrock Rovers, all the other coaches. You see, great. I'm very enthused by the young coaches in the league, and that's really, really bringing vibrant clubs forward. And that's a big plus, I think. And the style of football within the clubs is really progressive, and you know, I'm really encouraged by that.
Okay, well, he's from Talla, but he's one of your own, Stephen Kenny, ladies and gentlemen. Stephen Kenny there, talking to me on our Open for Business roadshow in Dundalk earlier in the year. Conor and Eddie, if I can go back to you finally, was there a town that really impressed you this year? Of the ones we were in, which one was your favourite, Eddie?
I'm going to pick two.
Right, that's okay.
For lifestyle, I'm going to pick Enniscrone. And for the layout of the town with that lovely central hub around the courthouse, I'm going to pick Dundalk.
Okay.
And I think the retailers in Dundalk offer a great choice, stronger than many, many other towns, particularly in the area of menswear, which is very badly catered for. And the other thing that I would compliment one shop in Dundalk, which is Vincent's, on wonderful window displays, absolutely superb. And that's been a common trend across all the towns we visited. The charity shops are stepping up to the plate. Their time has come around that whole sustainability part of their offer. And I think other retailers should wake up and take note.
And you've said it before, and I want to say it again, we should stop calling them charity shops.
Yes.
They're not charity shops.
They're not charity shops.
If you talk about trying to build sustainability and recycled economy into society, charity shops are not what they should be called.
Of beautiful vintage products right across a range of categories.
Yeah. Conor, what about you? Which towns did you like?
Well, I can show you my notes before I came in. I wrote down exactly the same as Eddie.
Did you?
Yeah, and I said I wouldn't be drawn to pick between the two, Enniscrone and Carrick and Shannon, for completely different reasons. Enniscrone for the quality of life.
He said Dundalk, not Carrick and Shannon.
Dundalk, I beg your pardon. Sorry, they're my two of that small type. Enniscrone for the quality of life. Enniscrone for a light touch. It's a good example of a local authority having a light touch and noticing what was not done and what was not done badly. I thought it was a fantastic thing. Everything from the lovely walk along the coast to the lightness of touch of the coffee shop and then the little coffee cabin, whatever it was. Just everything about it.
Beautiful part of the world.
Beautiful part of the world, but you could see it was being used by people who really appreciate it, and you could read into the lifestyle that was available for them. And then at the other end, Dundalk, for the same reasons that Eddie was just talking about the layout, the mixture, the variety, again, the lightness of touch. Going back to the stuff you were talking about a minute ago with traffic, there was a very small area that was fully pedestrianised, but a lot of the rest of it was a nice, healthy mix of each person giving way to the other.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you both for all your work on Open for Business. It's been a real pleasure for me to work with you both and to visit the various towns. Hopefully we'll do it again this year.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.